I'm still lost on the word rut. I stare up at him, imagining him looming over me and holding me down, and then just waves of ecstasy, I suppose. Heat is curling through my body in the most delicious way, though, and I feel I'm missing a key component as to why this is so very terrible. And your wife, she won't like that you have a class full of women when you're in this moon rut. He paces away, and I catch a glimpse of a lashing tail before he stomps back to me, all frustration and intense eyes.
I don't have a wife. That's the problem. I don't have an outlet for that time. Now do you understand why this won't work? You need a teacher, and I'm going to be absolutely useless.
And Magpie? The Taurian shakes his head.
Won't be available to teach. Unless you're asking if I'd rut with her, and no. Just no.
He shudders.
Now do you understand?
So you need a wife, I repeat slowly, because of this unfortunately timed moon. He huffs a frustrated laugh.
Sure, a wife. I just need a willing woman, but a wife would be ideal.
This is perfect, I tell him, thoughts racing with excitement. You said I needed a chaperone, right? What better chaperone than my own husband? We can marry and solve both of our problems. The look on his face becomes utterly aghast, as if I've stepped in a pile of excrement.
You can't be serious.
I'm a little stung at his reaction. I happen to be very serious. I need a husband and you need a bed partner. We can fulfill both of our needs. I pause, raising a finger. Does there have to be a baby? I'm afraid that would curtail my career as a guild artificer.
No baby, just rutting.
He runs a big hand down his snout again, and then meets my gaze.
You're not seriously offering to have sex with me just to get into the guild school.
Why is he so shocked? I'm a holder's daughter. I've grown up with the realization that sex and marriage would be transactional for me regardless. That I wouldn't be able to marry whom I chose, and it certainly wouldn't be for love. That's why Barnabas's betrayal was so devastating. I thought I'd truly lucked out and fallen in love. The esteemed Barnabas Chatworth would be appalled that I'd gone and married a Taurian, which truly makes the idea all the sweeter. That I've married a common guild employee and not some titled holder, or even wealthy man. But this Taurian doesn't know that I'm a holder's daughter. He probably thinks I've been dreaming of love all this time. If having sex with you gets me into the guild apprenticing halls, I'm all for it, sir. That strange, shaggy eyebrow of his goes up again, and then he looms over me once more. Perhaps it's a Taurian thing to try to use height to intimidate, but I refuse to back down. We stare at each other, practically nose to nose, and I keep my gaze steady, despite the flutter of my heart.
What if I told you to get into my bed right now?
He asks in a low, deadly voice. I'd tell you to get me a marriage certificate first, I retort. He rears back and barks a laugh, shaking his head at me.
I don't understand you. Aren't you afraid?
Afraid of what?
Marrying a stranger. Marrying a Taurian. Tying yourself to someone you just met.
I'm 30, I point out. I am also, as you guessed, poor. I am not a particular beauty. What options do you think I have in this world? I don't mention the whole holder's daughter thing because I suspect he would simply try to ransom me back to my father, or send me back to the hold immediately, and neither suits my purposes. I shake my head at him, doing my best to seem like the embittered spinster I'm trying to be. This is my one chance to make something of myself. I'm not going to let anything stand in my way. If it means a sham marriage, then that's what it means. People have gotten married for less practical reasons. I give him a bright smile. And if we don't find ourselves compatible, we can always divorce.
Not until after the conquest moon, we can't.
Not until after that, no.
Divorce is also a stain on a woman's reputation.
So is being penniless, old, and ugly. I'll take my chances. He huffs again.
You're not ugly. You are insane. And no, this isn't going to work.
I fight the urge to preen at the haphazard compliment. You said yourself you don't have a wife. You said the class is going to fall apart without you. I need a chaperone and to enter the guild as an apprentice. Why can't we help each other? I'm not going to be emotional about my virtue, and you shouldn't be. You have something I need. I have something you need. I try not to blush and fail. Let us be sensible about this.
You're telling me to be sensible.
I am. Do you find me repugnant? Is that the problem? I realize I'm no great beauty. Am I fishing for another compliment from a half-naked Taurian in the middle of the night when I should be focusing on my plan? Absolutely. The Taurian gives me a narrow-eyed stare.
What's your name again?
Sparrow. What's yours?
Hawk. A name I've earned. You haven't earned yours yet. What's your real name?
Hawk. Of course it's Hawk. It's a strong, respectable, dangerous guild name. I should have guessed. I keep my chin lifted despite his dismissive tone. Why do you need my real name? A hint of a smile graces his strange mouth.
If we're marrying, I need to know what to call you.
My heart flutters in my chest. Oh, I mentally race trying to think of a good fake name and come up blank. Aspeth, I blurt out, and then because it's not common and he might have heard of me, I add, like the Holder's daughter. No relation, though, and everyone shortens the name. You can, too. Oh, by the goddess, now I'm babbling to cover up my lie. He gives me a strange look.
What am I supposed to shorten Aspeth to? Ass?
Rude. You can call me Peth. Gods, even that sounds ridiculous. I tense, waiting for him to call me out, waiting for him to point out that I also happen to be 30 and unmarried, just like the Holder's daughter. But all he says is,
"You're sure?"
When I nod, he leans in.
If you leave me high and dry on the Conquest Moon after all of this maneuvering, I'm going to hunt you down, Aspeth.
No one is going to be dry at all on the Conquest Moon, I say merrily. No dryness, just conquesting, or whatever it is you'd like to do. Strangely enough, his nostrils flare and he gives me another long, searching look.
Gods help us both. I think I'm an idiot for saying yes.
I smile, pleased that I've gotten my way. I'm sure the moon-induced rut will be distracting, but easily handled. What's important is that I now have a teacher and a place as an apprentice. Nothing's going to stop me now. 7. Aspeth. I'm trying not to be smug as he guides me out of his bedroom. Getting him to agree to let me into the fledgling ranks was surprisingly easy. A hand in marriage, a virtue I don't plan on using, child's play. I'll think about the implications of it later. For now, I just feel as if I can breathe for the first time since arriving here in Vastwarren. I'm going to join the guild. I'm not going to be sent home. Everything will be fine.
You're both determined to do this?
Hawk asks as I rejoin Gwenna in the hall.
Can't talk you out of it.
Not me, I say automatically, and try not to stare too hard at Gwenna. If she abandons me at this point, I won't blame her, but I'll also miss her terribly. Having her at my side is the only thing that's kept me from having a nervous breakdown as one obstacle after another presented itself. I'm staying at Spiro's side, my former maid says, lifting her chin. I'm not going anywhere. I beam at her. We're going to have so much fun.
This is not about fun.
The Taurian snarls at me.
If you're expecting fun out of this, then you might as well turn around right now and march out that door.
Gwenna and I exchange grimaces at his sour attitude. Sheesh.
This is a dangerous job, and that's why apprenticing is so important. If you aren't going to take this seriously...
He pauses, glancing around.
Where in the five hells did Lark go?
Got pukey, Gwenna explains. She headed off to find the latrine. Hawk sighs heavily, then rubs a hand down his long brown snout. I want to stare at him in fascination, because I've never spent so much time around a Taurian before. But it seems rude. I guess I can stare at him after we get married. Goodness, we're going to be married. The thought strikes me as absurd and bizarre at the same time. If he finds out I'm a Holder's heir, he's going to send me back to my father, or blackmail me for funds or artifacts I don't have. It's imperative he never know.
Fine, whatever.
Hawk says after a long moment.
I'll show you to your quarters. Follow me before I change my mind.
And then he gives me a long, meaningful look. Wonderful, I chirp. Thank you. We pause, and I gaze at my surroundings, thrilled. I've tried to picture what the nests, the dorms the fledglings live in until they get official guild housing of their own, are like. It's dark, and I don't have my spectacles, but the place seems cozy enough. There are creaky wooden floors under my feet, and there's a draft coming in from somewhere. A large fireplace at the entrance has a pair of chairs near it, and on the landing of the stairs there's a painting that I can't make out. Upstairs, I imagine, is where the students stay. Overall, it's a bit ramshackle, but that just adds to the charm. Gwenna tugs on the cart in the doorway. Before she can drag it in farther, the Taurian lets out a heavy sigh, moves toward her, and grabs the entire thing, holding it against his chest as if it weighs nothing at all. It's a display of strength more than it is of politeness, and I'm unnerved as he heads up the stairs. Gwenna is too. She shoots me a suspicious look as I grab Squeaker's carrier and tuck it under my arm. Change his mind about what? What's he talking about? He's going to be my chaperone, I whisper brightly, so I can join the guild apprentice ranks. And how did you manage that? I'll explain later. The look she gives me is openly skeptical, but I keep smiling. I follow behind the Taurian as he stomps up the stairs, his hooves making sharp echoing raps on the wood. He moves to the door farthest down the narrow hall and throws it open, revealing a small room with a single bed, a ragged rug on the floor, and a trunk at the foot of the bed.
Quarters,
is all he says. Delightful, I say, and I mean it. This is the authentic experience, and I'm going to savor every moment. Looks as if we're sharing, Gwenna.
For tonight you are.
He agrees, turning to look at me over his shoulder.
Tomorrow you're with me. We'll find a priest in the morning.
What? Gwenna squawks. I wave a hand at her, indicating she needs to be quiet. I'll explain everything when we're alone. Hawk moves toward the trunk, and I can't help but notice that for his big, bulky form, he moves with a fascinating grace. Are all Taurians built like him? Or is he unique in his breadth? I eye his thick flanks and the pants nearly falling down his arse behind his tail. Gwenna tugs on my wet sleeve, glaring at me furiously. Later, I mouth to her, giving a little shake of my head. This is quite lovely. Thank you, Hawk.
Instructor Hawk to all fledglings.
He corrects and throws the trunk open, then points at the contents.
Uniforms. You'll wear these every day while you're in this house. Sash goes over the right shoulder. It's a plain white sash for a fledgling. Be up at 8 for breakfast and team registration. After that, we'll go straight into training.
Before I can say anything, he turns and heads straight for me, pinning me with his gaze.
You. Be up earlier.
Right. Of course, Instructor Hawk. The words sound awkward together, and I can't help but tease. You sure you don't want me to call you Master? The look he gives me could make grass wither.
I'm not a guild master. Taurians never are.
He storms out of the room, nearly knocking Gwenna over onto the pile of bags in the cart.
Get some sleep. Lark can take care of herself.
When do we meet, Magpie? I call after him. He ignores me and heads down the stairs. Rude. Perhaps we'll see Magpie in the morning, then. A thrill of excitement races through me at the thought of meeting my childhood hero. Dreamily, I turn on my heel and set Squeaker's carrying case down upon the floor, only to notice that Gwenna is glaring at me. Hard. What was that all about? Gwenna asks, her tone dangerously even. I persuaded Instructor Hawk that we both need to join the school to round out the numbers. I release Squeaker from her carrier, and she immediately waddles out with an indignant look, her orange fur spiked with rain. She begins to sniff things, settling in. It's all taken care of. What did you convince him with, pray tell? My winning personality? When she continues to scowl, I can tell she's not buying it. He needs a wife. Gwenna's screech echoes in the room. What? I immediately race over to her side and clap a hand over her mouth, settling on the bed beside her. Shh! I don't want him to change his mind. Are you insane? She hisses. You're going to hook up with some stranger just because he needs a wife? Does he know who you are? No, and neither of us is going to tell him. Aspeth, he has hooves. Well, I'm sure his other parts are reasonably normal, don't you think? But apparently there's some rutting situation. I ignore Gwenna's horrified moan and continue on. And he needs a bed companion, and I need a chaperone, so it works out quite nicely for both of us. Don't look at me like that. Your father will be dead unless I get some artifacts. Me taking a Taurian to my bed is the least of my problems. Well, no wonder you got him to agree, she mutters. Horny old goat. I don't think he's that old, and he's a Taurian. There's no goat involved there, just bull. She points at me. You are the worst, and this is a terrible plan. You won't tell on me, will you? Gwenna sighs heavily. No, no, I suppose I won't. But if you call me Chickadee again, all bets are off. My stomach is full of butterflies all night. I don't sleep a wink, just stare up at the ceiling in the darkness while Gwenna snores in the bed next to me. Squeaker sprawled atop my breasts in her usual sleeping spot. The cat is enormously heavy and presses on my lungs, but I don't mind. It's a comforting weight, having her there, and I pet her and try to compose my thoughts. I'm marrying a stranger in the morning. A stranger with hooves, as Gwenna pointed out. His face isn't even remotely the same shape as mine. I suppose kissing is out. And then I wonder why I'm even thinking about kissing at all. I did enjoy kissing Barnabas, I think wistfully, but his kisses were a lie to get me to marry him. I'd rather take an honest man with no kisses than a liar with a sweet tongue. Then again, I'd rather join the guild with no man, but I guess I can't have everything. Hours pass, and when the dawn begins to creep into the skies, I ease myself from bed and feed the cat her dried rations, then dress myself in the uniform I had made for this day. I've been on my guild plans for months now, and so I've made myself a fitted version of the very basic fledgling garb. Each fledgling wears brown trousers with multiple pockets, knee-high leather boots, and a plain white shirt under a guild jacket encrusted with rows of buttons. Over the tightly buttoned jacket, an individual guild sash is worn affixed over one shoulder and showcasing the particular guild artificer's honors. Mine is plain at the moment, but I fix it anyhow. My boots are finely tooled leather with decorative sparrows dancing up the sides next to the buttons, and I have matching braces that look very nice and keep my large, fashionably puffed sleeves out of the way. My blouse is plain white, as is proper, but I've made sure that it's crafted from the finest linen, and I've paired it with a functional overskirt in brown made out of a glossy, shot silk that gleams in the light. I look rather fetching, if I do say so myself. I feel well armored against the disparaging comments that the men of the guild are likely to make this morning when I show up for apprenticing with the rest of Magpie's crew. It's outrageous that these men think women can't hunt for artifacts as well as anyone else, as if gender has anything to do with it. Putting on my spectacles, I peer at my appearance in the small mirror mounted on the wall, tuck a few stray strands of hair into a bun at my nape, and then pull my spectacles off again and hide them in one of the trunks. I can't let anyone know about my vision issues until I'm official. Swallowing hard, I take one last look at Gwenna still in bed, and my sweet squeaker, who's hungrily eating the last few bites of a kibble. I kneel down to scratch Squeaker's orange chin. She'll be fine in the room by herself while we're in our schooling, and Gwenna will make sure that she's got more food and water and her toilet pads are changed out. I have to go, I whisper to Squeaker. I'm off to marry a Taurian. Wish me luck. Squeaker just purrs and leans into my caress, oblivious to the chaos in my head. She's happy as long as she's got kibble and a nice comfy place to lay her head. It's Gwenna I'm worried about. What if she changes her mind and spills the truth about who I really am? We're friends, but I know she can also be stubborn when she thinks we're doing something foolish. Marrying a stranger? That has to be the height of foolishness in practical Gwenna's eyes. I head down the stairs, my stomach full of flutters. Someone's opened the shutters, and light floods into the dormitory. It's a quaint place, with heavy wooden beams and equally heavy furniture placed in strategic sitting spots, but I suppose it makes sense given that a Taurian would break anything dainty. It's cozy, though. There's a shelf with books on it across from the fireplace, and a desk covered in papers on the route to what must be the kitchen area. There's no one around, and I have a moment to squint at the large portrait of a strong-looking woman at the landing. She's wearing a guild sash over one shoulder and pants. Her face is lit up with wonder, and she holds a glittering box in her hands, extending them out toward the viewer. This must be Magpie. A box. I wonder which of her many finds are contained in the box. I lean in closer, trying to focus my eyes. Perhaps this isn't Magpie after all. The sash she wears is the red of a guildmaster, though. How very confusing. I practically press my nose to the painting, trying to get the object in focus.
What are you wearing?
The harsh voice echoes in the quiet dormitory halls, and I wince, turning around at the top of the landing. It's the Taurian, standing at the base of the stairs. He's dressed in a guild uniform similar to mine, but his shoulder is covered with the bright blue of his guild sash and something gleaming that I can't make out. But the large russet head is most certainly his, as is the wide breadth of shoulders in the white linen shirt. He's not wearing a guild jacket and looks so casual, I don't know what to make of it. I decide to ignore his state of undress and smile instead. Oh, good morning, Instructor Hawk. I was admiring the painting. I gesture at it behind me. I don't suppose you know...
What are you wearing?
He repeats the sentence with the same unhurried cadence, but there's nevertheless a touch of menace in his tone. It makes me bristle, and my back stiffens. He's going to need to learn how to deal with women if he plans on being married to me, because the more you order me about, the less inclined I am to listen. Is that magpie in the painting? Hawk points at the base of the stairs as if indicating I should move there, and quickly. Even though I'm irritated, I need him. I can't afford to anger the person I need to enroll me into the fledgling program, at least not on day one. Once I'm safely ensconced in training, I don't give a god's arse what he thinks of me. Fighting back my annoyance, I head down the stairs and stand in the spot he indicates.
What are you wearing?
He asks again. A uniform. I flick a strand of Squeaker's cat hair off my sleeve. Why, am I wrinkled?
That's not the uniform I gave you.
This close, I can see the displeasure on his unusual face. That's correct. I had this one tailored before I left home. His arms cross over his chest and he glares down at me.
Are you not taking this seriously? Is all of this a joke to you? Because we can end this right now.
Of course I'm taking this seriously. I put my hands on my hips and glare up at him. I should think that's obvious, given that I had a uniform made even before I arrived. You're insulting me by suggesting otherwise.
Everyone wears the same uniforms when they're a fledgling.
He says in that dangerous tone of his.
The same shitty uniform. You want to be taken seriously, then you'll change.
Having a blouse tailored doesn't mean that I'm not serious. He leans in and I automatically lean back, his muzzle in my face.
Do you really want me to rip those clothes off you, Aspeth? Is that what we're going for here?
I let out a squeak of distress, blinking up at him. He's alarmingly tall. Alarmingly tall. And a little scary. Did you really want to start our marriage, ripping my clothes off?
Well, I would love nothing more than to do that in about 3 weeks.
He murmurs in that deadly voice.
Right now, I just want you to change. Understand?
Managing a nod, I hold my breath until he steps back and gestures up the stairs again. This time I race up them, heading back to my quarters. Once inside, I pull off my tailored clothes with shaking hands and fish the much cruder set out from under Squeaker, because of course she's made a nest on them. They're wrinkled and covered in cat hair now. But if this is what Instructor Hawk wants, this is what Instructor Hawk gets. I can't believe I'm going to marry the grump. I'm an idiot. I tuck the ill-fitting blouse into the waist of the pants and wonder if I should just lick my wounds and retreat, return to my father's keep and then what? Wait for a rival holder to come and behead me? Wait for someone to steal our lands and just pray they're in a benevolent mood and send me to a convent instead? No, this is my only choice. Annoyed at Hawk, and at myself for hesitating, I return downstairs, this time clad in a blouse that is far too tight across my bust and makes me look stout and matronly because the waist isn't cinched. The pants barely fit over my backside, and I suspect if I have to sit at any point, they'll split. But I'm in the uniform he wanted. Happy now?
thrilled,
he says flatly.
Let's get going. You have to be at registration in 2 hours.
Hawk tosses a brown cloak over my shoulders and then puts one on himself. He pulls the hood up, his forward-pointing horns making the tent of fabric huge over his head, the tips just barely sticking out of the hem. Following his lead, I pull up my cloak hood as well and head out the front door behind him. Despite the early hour, the city is bustling. We head down the busy, crowded street, narrowly avoiding the contents of a chamber pot that someone empties above, and I trot after him. I keep close because I don't want him to use any excuse to call this off. I'm a little surprised when he takes me to the nearest temple of Asteria. I thought that Taurians worshipped old Garrosh, the god of war and destruction. Perhaps he's not the right god for a wedding, no matter if it's Taurian or not. Hawk marches into the temple, his hooves echoing obscenely loudly on the floor. There's a nun taking donations near the front altar, and he heads directly for her, pulling a small bag of coin from his waist.
I need a marriage, quickly. Get me a priestess.
Please, I add politely, moving to his side and taking his arm.
Hush now,
he tells me. If you're going to demand things, at least have the decency to add a please on the end. You'll find people much more willing to deal with you. He lowers his hood, turning to give me an incredulous look.
Are you chiding me?
I shrug. Perhaps he thinks he didn't need chiding. On this, we'll have to agree to disagree. Hawk snorts, as if unable to believe his ears. I keep waiting for him to shrug my arm off, but he doesn't. I guess it would ruin the fantasy of our hasty marriage if he did. The priestess arrives a few moments later, a puzzled expression on her lined face. It's the middle of the week, my dears. A marriage on the weekend, when the goddess is at rest, is a blessed marriage. Wouldn't you rather wait?
No waiting.
Hawk sounds as gruff and cranky as ever. It needs to happen today, I try to explain, a gracious smile on my face. The priestess blinks at us and then leans in, confiding to me. My dear, if you're in a carrying sort of way, a few days won't make a difference, and your child might need the goddess's blessing more than anyone. I stare at her in horror. She thinks I'm pregnant? I glance up at Hawk in surprise, then back at the priestess. She's ignoring Hawk as if he doesn't exist, her gaze focused entirely on me. And I don't know whether to laugh or be offended. I decide upon being offended and pretend to lean in to confide back to her, my voice deliberately loud. If I have to go another night without this virile buck in my bed, I shall scream. The wedding must happen today. She makes a distressed sound, and somewhere behind her, I can hear the muffled giggle of a novice. I see. She composes herself and holds her hand out, and the novice puts the bag of money in her grip. I suppose the goddess does love. Love. Take your man's hands, and I will join you. Wait, I blurt out, looking up at Hawk. Don't we need witnesses?
The church registers all marriages,
he says. For another coin, you can have a lovely certificate to post over your home altar. The priestess adds, putting her hand out for an additional coin. Hawk hands it over without question. And I guess we're about to be married.
8. Hawk, 25 days before the conquest moon. My new bride's hands twitch in my sweaty grasp, her cuticles covered in tiny scabs from zealous overchewing. Her expression is bland and composed, but the twitching gives away her nerves. She's as anxious about this marriage as I am, and when the priestess says the last of the matrimonial prayer, Aspith breathes a sigh of relief and flashes me a quick smile that takes me aback and makes my tail flick. I'm still thinking about earlier, replaying the moment in my head time and again when Aspeth realized the priestess was ignoring me. If I have to go another night without this virile buck in my bed, I shall scream. She made a fool of herself, and the priestess, simply to shut down any argument, and I know it was for my benefit. It was kind.
There now, you are married in the eyes of the goddess,
the priestess is saying. Her gaze flicks over me dismissively, then focuses on Aspeth's composed form once more.
No kiss of union is necessary. Oh, we'll kiss,
my new wife says cheerfully.
I wouldn't want anyone to think we weren't united.
And she puts a hand in the front of my clean-pressed guild shirt and pulls me down toward her. Before I can even think about how I'm going to fit my mouth to her flat-faced human one, she presses a smacking kiss on the leathery end of my nose.
There.
She gazes up at me and then impulsively reaches forward and gives me a quick hug.
So it is done,
the priestess says, and there's a hint of distaste in her voice.
Go with the goddess. Our certificate, if you please.
Aspeth clings to my arm and beams at the woman as if she truly is the happiest of brides. The priestess's smile is tight.
Very well. However, I must say I'm not familiar with the ring ceremony of the Taurian people.
The look she gives me is pointed.
I'm afraid you will have to go elsewhere for that. Ring ceremony?
Aspeth asks. Five hells, I'm not explaining that wedding custom to her. We're skipping it, doing things the human way, I say gruffly, and grab my new bride by the arm. Hurry with that certificate, we're on a tight schedule. The priestess hurries away, and Aspeth shoots me a curious look.
Should I inquire about the ring ceremony?
In which she fits a ring around my cock and balls to show that she owns me, and I pierce her cunt with a matching, slightly smaller one to show my side of fealty. It's a tender ceremony. It also works a lot better with female Taurians, who are as superbly wide as they are strong. I can't imagine it with Aspeth, who I feel nothing for but vague annoyance. I imagine pinching her cunt in my hand until her clit pokes free, and then piercing it with a ring to show she's mine, and my cock stirs. All right, I feel nothing but vague annoyance and a hint of moon-related arousal. Don't ask about the rings. She nods, and we drop it. A brief time later, we have the certificate and hurry back to Magpie's dormitory. Inside, it's all chaos, as I knew it would be. The students are in the kitchen in varying stages of readiness. Lark is hungover, her head on the table, her hair in her face. The tiny priestess who arrived last night is in uniform, but she also looks ready to cry as she argues with Lark about who is in charge. She clutches prayer beads tightly in her hands and all but falls to her knees when we return. Aspeth's companion is busy ironing her shirt, wearing nothing but a chemise as she leans over the stove in the kitchen. There are two other pots on the stove, both bubbling over and hissing. The Slitherskin is the only calm one, dressed in a tiny uniform, his small hands tucked at his waist. But he's wearing his enormous house on his back, despite my repeatedly telling him not to. To top it off, there's a strange, fat, orange cat in the center of the table, eating the last of the salted pork. "Where's Magpie?" I growl, trying not to lose my temper at the chaos.
"Where she always is,"
Lark says, grinding the heel of her palm into her eye socket.
"Sleeping it off."
My temper flares just a bit more. I make up for Magpie's lack a lot of the time, but fledgling initiation is one of those times when she needs to be there. I shouldn't be surprised that she's still soused, but I am definitely growing more and more annoyed with every moment that passes. It's up to me to take care of things yet again and to make excuses for her. Even though I owe Magpie my life and would willingly work at her side for the rest of my days, it's hard to remain loyal when she doesn't even bother to do the bare minimum. Jaw clenched, I tug on my nose ring. It's a twitchy habit, like humans biting their nails. Now do I wake her up, knowing there will be a scene? That she'll likely scare these students off before they ever start their training? The last time I dragged Magpie along with her students against her will, she bitched the entire time, vomited in someone's pack, and passed out on the obstacle course and had to be carried home. I heard about it from the other Taurians for weeks on end. It's fine, I remind myself. Everything is fine. I can handle this. If Magpie wants to sleep, she can mucking sleep. I'll take over her duties like I always do. Let's just get going. They ignore me. Lark continues to rub her head. The priestess starts another prayer, her lips moving as she passes the beads through her folded fingers. The Slitherskin continues to eat his breakfast, ignoring the chaos around him. The woman ironing her blouse by the stove holds her top up, admiring the pleats, and Aspeth moves to her side.
Oh, that's nice work. Can you do mine next?
No, I say quickly. No more ironing. It's time to go. I grab the priestess by her collar, at least she's dressed, and haul her to her feet. You, get shoes. You by the stove, get your clothes on. Lark, get rid of the cat. Aspeth sputters, turning to look at me.
No one is getting rid of the cat.
I ignore her and point at the Slitherskin. You, take your house off. You need to leave it behind. The lizard creature takes one look at me, blinks one eyelid, and returns to eating. He does not, in fact, take off the oversized shell house he has attached to his back. He doesn't even bother to tug on one of the straps. He just ignores me, too. At least Gilam will listen. I pause. Where in the five hells is Gilam?
Left this morning.
Lark offers, struggling to her feet and picking up the cat.
Said he didn't want to be with a bunch of women and a frog. No offense to you, Kip.
She adjusts the fat cat in her arms and frowns at the cat hair that floats into the air.
How often do you brush this monster? Every day,
Aspeth tells her.
She's just a shedder. And did you hear that, Instructor Hawk? Gilam left, and now we're back to five. This is perfect.
I stare at my team of fledglings for the new season, at the half-dressed woman with perfect pleats in her blouse, at the weepy priestess and the drunk niece of my boss, at the Slitherskin who ignores me, at my new wife. This is a nightmare, and Aspeth's pleasure at finding Gilam to be gone is getting on my last nerve. I downgrade her from sexually intriguing but vexing back to just vexing again.
Aspeth.
It gives me great pride to welcome the newest class of fledglings to the Royal Artifactual Guild.
Rooster beams at us from his spot behind an ornate wooden podium. He stands taller than the podium, which makes me suspect he's standing on a box of some kind.
On behalf of King Catherine III, we look forward to working with you and training you to join our ranks.
My heart wants to burst with excitement. I tremble in my seat in the audience, thrilled to my core. This is it. This is what I've been waiting for. I don't care who I have to marry or train with or where I have to sleep. I'm going to be trained to be a guild member. I'm going to save my hold. I'm going to...
You'd think he's hand-picked all of us with that tone of voice, Gwenna says, leaning over to my side. Acts like he's the king.
Hush, I whisper to her, while Rooster is a little pompous, or rather a lot. I don't blame him for taking pride in the welcoming ceremony. It's an important moment in our lives to be added to the roster of fledglings, the trainees who will live in the guild nests, such a clever name, and work with the guild masters to learn the craft.
Once you are signed into the fledgling lists, there is no backing out.
Rooster casts a stern look over the audience.
You will either pass your test or fail. Fail, and you will become one of the guild repeaters. You will work with the guild, performing menial tasks and paying off the lessons squandered until another guildmaster decides to let you fledge again.
Gwenna pinches my leg, leaning over.
What's a repeater? He just said, someone who fails out.
Yes, but what do they do? What tasks is he talking about?
I think for a moment, trying to recall what I read in the pamphlets and books about the guild. There are guards, and each house has an assigned nest maid who takes care of the food and laundry.
Wait, so if I fail, I become a maid again? Except this time I don't get paid?
Asbeth, what in all the mucking hells?
At my other side, Kip the Slither Skin hisses loudly. We both turn to him, and he glares sternly at us, putting a finger to his mouth to indicate silence. Then he licks his eyeball.
Right.
I put a finger to my lips and give Gwenna a meaningful look.
You're not going to be a repeater, I promise her. We're going to pass.
She growls at me. Growls. I'm guessing she's not going to want a hug after this. It's a shame, because I'm so excited to be here that I want to hug everyone. Even Rooster, if he came close enough. Commoners hug, don't they? Surely it wouldn't be too out of line. I continue smiling as Rooster drones on about guild history and the Mansa Wars and how the guild was established by the king 300 years ago. I know all this, so I focus on my teammates instead. Lark's head bobs, her eyes closed as if she's at prayers. She looks truly focused, and I'm so delighted to see that. Until she leans too far forward and snores. At her side, Meriden the priestess nudges her, the look on her face studiously polite. She stares ahead, her gaze focused intently on Rooster at his podium. My gaze slides past them to the next row, where a male fledgling about my age is looking over at us. Our eyes meet, and then he makes an obscene gesture at me with his tongue. Flustered, I look away. Good gods.
As your teachers and mentors, the guildmasters expect 3 things from each fledgling.
Rooster continues.
Curiosity, eagerness, honesty. Let me tell you a little bit about each one and why it matters.
Gwenna leans toward me again. Do you think he's going to go on for much longer? I bite back a grimace, because I truly don't know. Already he's been up there for quite some time. The people on the benches in front of us are drooping, and I suspect more than one is nodding off, just as Lark was. Possibly. He hasn't touched on the guild handbook yet. She groans quietly. How is it that he's making grave robbing sound so boring? I shoot her a frown.
It's not grave robbing, Gwenna.
Call it what you like, Gwenna shrugs, and then lifts her chin, indicating something across the aisle. Think we'll have to deal with a lot of that here? A quick look finds yet another man, this one younger, making lewd licking motions with his tongue and aiming his attention at Meriden, who is steadfastly ignoring him.
Goddess, I hope not, I mutter.
Here I thought that once we were let in as fledglings, we'd be seen as just a few more guild recruits. Perhaps I've been far too optimistic.
Hawk. You married her? At the back of the main guild hall, Raptor looks at me as if I've grown another head. I understand. It's an absolutely insane move for me to make. I'm still not entirely sure why I did it. Probably thinking with my little head. I pretend to keep my focus on my fledglings, several rows ahead at the front of the hall. They're sitting with 19 other guild teams waiting to be initiated. We needed a full team, and I need a partner for the Conquest Moon. But her, the bossy one? He stomps his hooves in agitation, idly watching the ceremony. I thought you couldn't stand her. I needed students. She needs a chaperone. We'll go our separate ways after this if we need to, get the marriage annulled. I don't know why it's a big deal. He looks over at me with that "are you insane?" expression again. You're joking, right? No one's going to grant you an annulment after it's very clear that you rutted her. And if you have to marry a human, why that one? No one takes her seriously. No one takes us seriously either. Any reputation you had left is going to be shredded by that woman clinging to your arm. Did Magpie talk you into this? I scoff. No. But it's true that Magpie takes in all kinds that don't pass. There have been women who showed up on recruitment day but didn't last a week. Most didn't make it through the training, either from harassment from the male fledglings or simply because the job itself is too dangerous and unpleasant. Magpie is a sucker for a female student, but the truth is that most can't hack it like she does, or did. The current Magpie wouldn't get 10 steps underground without sucking on a bottle of liquor. Bad, bad idea, my friend, is all Raptor says, arms crossed. I know it's a bad idea. I don't need him weighing in on it. I ignore his headshake of disappointment, pretending interest as Master Finch brings his 5 chosen fledglings to the front of the room so they can be inducted into the Book of Names. The 5 names are recorded at the beginning of the year, and when the students graduate, those names are crossed out and replaced with their chosen guild names. It's all very pompous and self-congratulatory, but that might be the Taurian side of me speaking. We hate fuss. Finch guides his students to the Book of Names and watches as they sign it. My students are toward the back of the hall in one of the last rows, so I'm hoping things are cleared out before I have to go up there with them. It should be Magpie doing that, but she hasn't yet appeared. She swore she'd dress and show up in time for the ceremony, but we've been here for hours now and there's no sign of her. Something tells me that she headed for the nearest bar instead, and I tamp down my feelings of frustration. She'll show up. She has to. I eye the doorway, but it's empty. Class after class heads toward the book and signs their names in, receiving their official fledgling pin from Rooster as they do. As the room clears out, the smirks and nudges become more obvious, and they're all directed toward my students. I know what they see when they look at the bench for Magpie's house. They see 4 women in varying degrees of softness, led by Aspeth, who has her chin in the air as if she rules the place, and a Slitherskin, who is still wearing his house, much to my irritation. We're a joke to them. I can't even be mad at the snickers they make. I look at them and I see another year that we won't have a passing class. I see another chance for commissions going up in smoke. I look at them and I wonder which one is going to peel off first, ruining the season for the others. A passing class must have 5.
The fledgling class of Master Magpie, Rooster calls out.
My students get to their feet, and despite the fact that the room is nearly empty, the whispers grow louder. Raptor grunts.
I'm starting to get it now.
I huff, torn between amusement and sheer annoyance at Aspeth again. She's wearing her guild uniform, but it doesn't fit her the way it fits the others. Her ample backside pulls the fabric tight, outlining her rump right down to a dimple in one plump cheek. When she turns to the side, her tits strain against the guild blouse, and Raptor makes another fascinated sound.
Maybe you can gag her when she talks.
I elbow him. That's my wife, you clawed brain.
Rut her good, my friend.
He claps me on the back so hard that I stagger past him and the other Taurians remaining at the back of the hall. They chuckle as I move forward, crossing the long hall to stand at my student's side.
Guildmaster Magpie,
Rooster calls again, searching the room as he stands behind the massive book.
Is Guildmaster Magpie here?
I clear my throat, moving to stand in front of the podium. Guildmaster Magpie is sick. I'll sign the book in her place. Rooster's lip curls at me, as if he's offended by the sight of a Taurian standing in front of him.
You're not a guildmaster. Where is Guildmaster Magpie?
Like I said, sick. His lips thin further, and I have no doubt that he's thinking of the last two classes when I presented them, too. I continue on. I'll present her class and she'll be here for graduation. Even if I have to haul her bodily in front of the guild itself, she'll be here. He takes a deep breath as if considering, and then holds the feathered quill out to me. I sign the book with Magpie's name, the quill ridiculously small and fragile in my too large Taurian hand. I manage not to snap it, and then turn to hand it off to the first student in line. It's Aspeth, of course.
I assume all these females have chaperones? Rooster continues in that haughty voice of his. You can provide proof of this?
They do, and I can. He eyes us and then gestures for Aspeth to sign. I've never seen a student so giddy to put their name in the book as her, only to pause over the book itself and then look at me.
What's our last name? 9. Aspeth. I fuss with the sash on my shoulder over and over again, just for an excuse to touch it. Right now the sash is plain white, but I envision the day it's covered in pins representing the artifacts I've brought to the guild. Small circles for minor artifacts, and the four-pointed stars for the major artifacts. I imagine Magpie's sash must be absolutely encrusted, and the weight of it on her shoulder must bring so much pride. I cannot wait to meet her. It's going to be glorious. Glancing up, I eye the others in our nest. Lark looks bored and slightly hungover, slumped on a bench. Gwenna sits properly on the bench in front of her, frowning, as the brown-skinned priestess at her side folds her hands and goes through yet another prayer. On the far side of Gwenna, the strange child-sized lizard-man Slitherskin sits, swinging his tiny feet, the massive shell of his house on his back. I haven't heard him say two words since we arrived, but maybe that's normal. I genuinely don't know. Our teachers are nowhere to be seen. There's still no Magpie, and now we've lost Hawk, too. I purse my lips, trying not to frown. The other nest groups have abandoned the hall, along with their teachers. I'm not sure what we do now. Do we follow them out? Wait for instructions? Gwenna looks at me, curious, and the priestess does too. It's clear they're looking to me for answers. All right, then. I'll go find our teacher. Your husband, Gwenna says, pretending to study her nails. You'll go find your husband. Right, yes, that. My face gets hot. It's jarring to think that I've just married a stranger, but I don't want anything to come in the way of the classes here. My husband, I say confidently, lifting my chin. I'm sure he's around here somewhere. Lark tumbles back on the wooden bench, lying flat and flinging an arm over her eyes. Wake me up when you find him. I frown at her, but it's not like I can scold her. She's a student, just like me. With a flick of my fingers over my coveted sash, I pretend to wipe away a speck of dust. Be right back. I turn and walk away, heading out of the main hall and into one of the side corridors. I've never been deeper into the actual guild hall before today, but it can't be that hard to figure out, I hope. I'm familiar with the entryway, as that was where I was humiliated yesterday, but deeper inside, not at all. All of the students filed out of the main doors, heading toward the swan statue, but I head in the opposite direction. Something tells me that Hawk wouldn't leave without us. He seems to take his job quite seriously. So I head farther into the hall, turning down one curving corridor lined with doors. I pass something that looks like a blurry library. I wish I was wearing my spectacles, but appears to be empty. Farther down the hall, I hear the sound of arguing.
I said I'm handling things.
A deep, sonorous male voice says as I quietly approach. That's Hawk, and he's in one of the nearby rooms. I peek in, and when I see his enormous, blurry brown form standing near a short, squat man who has to be that rooster arse, I duck behind the door and hover in the hallway. Should I let them know I'm here? Say something?
Your version of handling things is very different from mine,
Rooster says in a haughty voice. I hear the stamp of hooves on the ground and a loud, bullish snort.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but your only male candidate for your nest has fled. He signed up with Mallard's class this morning, filling their last slot. Now you've nothing but a horde of flighty females.
Don't forget the slither skin.
Hawk drawls.
And a lizard man who won't take off his house to get in uniform. Truly, it's embarrassing.
My mouth purses into an angry little pucker. How dare he?
It's a disgrace to the guild's history.
Rooster continues.
And where is Magpie?
Like I said, she's sick. I'm handling things.
She was sick last year on enrollment day,
Rooster counters.
And the year before, she showed up late.
She was? She did?
Like I said, I'm handling it.
Hawk's tone grows more and more impatient.
I do not doubt your competency, Hawk. That has never been in question. You are good at your job, but you're not a guildmaster. Only guildmasters can teach a fledgling nest. You know the rules as well as I do.
Silence. Chicken Man continues.
20 guildmasters are allowed at one time for 20 nests. 20 teams of fledglings are allowed to join every year. Magpie might be a guildmaster due to her past exploits, but she is in danger of losing her position. If she doesn't get herself in order, do you know what's going to happen?
More silence. I so badly want to peek around the corner, but I don't dare.
Your class will fail.
He continues.
Just as they failed the year before last and the year before that. And I will not be able to protect her any longer. She will lose her guildmaster position to another who can make the guild money. She will lose her house and her pension, and she will end up in the gutters. You're a good artificer and a good teacher, but you're not in charge. She'll undermine everything you do and chase your students away. Do you understand?
His tone is so dismissive, so condescending, that I want to punch him. What a rude, odious little man. I loathe him. I want Hawk to give him a verbal tearing down. I want Hawk to tell him what's what. I want him to lay into that peahen of a man and tell him what to do with his...
This class won't fail,
is all Hawk says.
How can they not fail?
Rooster continues, and I can hear the astonishment in his voice.
I saw that bunch of misfits myself. You're doomed. Magpie has doomed you.
I'm going to push them harder than ever, and I'll handle Magpie just as I always have.
Heavy hooves clomp on the floor, and it takes me a moment to realize he's heading toward the door where I'm spying. Just as I jerk away from the heavy wooden door, Hawk comes around the corner. We stare at each other for a moment, and then he grabs me by the arm and escorts me away, his grip tight and leaving me no choice but to trot alongside his much longer strides.
You'll keep all of that to yourself,
he murmurs as he hauls me back toward the others. Of course I will, I hiss at him. But do you want to tell me what's going on?
Later.
We round the corner back toward the others, much quicker than I anticipated. They all sit up as we approach, and then there's no time to ask anything else.
I notice Gwenna has a tight expression on her face, and the look she shoots me indicates she wants to talk. Well, that makes two of us. Hawk releases my arm as we rejoin the others, and I resist the urge to rub it indignantly.
Good, you're all here,
he says in a curt voice.
Now, if you'll all follow me outside, we'll get your backpacks.
Backpacks? Gwenna asks.
Aye, to fill with rocks.
Hawk marches over to Lark's bench and hauls her upright by the shoulder.
We're going to see how far you can march with a full pack to determine your stamina. I need to know how fit you are, so then I can push you even harder.
I swallow hard. Somehow, when I'd dreamed of adventuring through the tunnels, I hadn't thought about physical fitness. Given that I've spent most of my life seated at elegant tables or in front of a book, I suspect this is going to be a rather awful afternoon. Hawk turns on us, his eyes flaring with irritation.
Well, why are you all just standing there? Do you want to be fledglings or not?
With a terrified squeak, the priestess races for the door, and we follow after her.